We have four speakers on this panel, and we're going to start with Alex Wallerstein, who is Assistant Professor of Science and Technology Studies at the Stevens Institute of Technology. He is author of Restricted Data, the Nuclear Secrecy Blog, and is a historian of science who specializes in the history of nuclear weapons and nuclear secrecy. He's going to be speaking today about the success of his Nuke Map tool as a means of teaching a new generation of people about the effects of nuclear weapons. And his talk is entitled Personalizing the Bomb, Teaching an Online Generation About the Effects of Nuclear Weapons.
Hello, thank you. I want to thank the organizers for inviting me and thank you for listening to me. I'm a historian of science who works on the history of nuclear weapons and nuclear secrecy, and I'm also a web developer, and I'm always looking for new ways to engage audiences on questions of social relevance for issues that involve science and technology in particular. And because a lot of what I work on as a historian is nuclear weapons, that's been a lot of my research interest in web development as well. I'm going to be talking about a couple projects I've worked on today, and specifically those that are built to engage with a much broader public, and specifically a younger public. As you no doubt know, nuclear weapons awareness amongst younger people, people 30 and under, is pretty low. My work is trying to increase that awareness a little bit. So during the Cold War, as many of you probably know, most of you probably know, the U.S. government produced all manner of tools for helping its planners, both military and civil defense, to understand the effects of nuclear weapons. Guidebooks like Gladstone and DeLand's famous effects of nuclear weapons, with its manual computer, the Dr. Strangelove-looking thing in the middle there, allows for the calculation of prompt nuclear effects. And this sort of tool allows a technically minded person to do some pretty rough back of the envelope modeling. Other models were developed over the course of this period to help model long-term effects of downwind radioactivity, of probable casualties from a nuclear attack, even effects of a nuclear explosion on the prices of home values. That was like the Hudson Institute, of course. Of course, trying to apply these codes and equations and models to any specific location requires doing a lot of data crunching. The government has done a lot of this for cities it is interested in, so New York, Washington, and Moscow get nuked a lot through these hypothetical means. And other organizations during the Cold War, like the Physicians for Social Responsibility, the Federation of American Scientists, and the Natural Resources Defense Council, use the same sort of data to create their own visualizations, their own models, their own calculations. And I point this out to point out that I'm well aware of the long history of doing this sort of thing and the huge amount of work that's been done on this already. But doing this sort of stuff from scratch is hard to do. It requires a lot of technical acumen, often requires a lot of computational power. And this is the gap that I set out to try and fill. I wanted people to have a way of understanding what nuclear weapons can do that could be personalized to them. Because I think that's the way you get people really interested. Because unless you live in New York or Washington or Moscow, you're probably not used to thinking of your city getting nuked multiple times. So I made this website originally in 2012, and I upgraded it pretty significantly in mid-2013. Originally developed the codes for this to help in teaching. I found it was very hard to teach undergraduates about different types of nuclear weapons, to have them understand why somebody could support, say, the bombing of Hiroshima, but not support building the hydrogen bomb. They found this to be kind of a contradiction. I wanted them to understand that these weapons are not just apocalyptic, everything ends instantly, but that their effects are actually much more gritty and more unpleasant, and actually thinking through the whole logic of them forces you to come to grips with them as artifacts, as real things in the world, not just metaphors for the end of the world. This version of these things is simulated because I didn't want to try to do it in real time. Sometimes the internet acts up. But you're more than welcome to visit these sites on your own laptop. They should work on pretty much any computer. So I'll show you how this works. The URL is nuclearsecrecy.com/nukemap. Yeah, nuclearsecrecy.com/nukemap. If you Google nukemap, this is what'll come up. So when I teach students about this, this is more or less the... Oh, whoops, I didn't hit the right button. All right. Oh, I've been hitting the wrong button the whole time. All right, good to know. All right, look at that, even better. Note to self. All right, when I teach students about this, this is more or less what I show them first. When you open up the site, it will try to find the largest city near to you and put that as the immediate first target. So if I was doing this, I teach in Hoboken, which is right there on the other side of the water, and it will target New York when you open it up. If you're doing this in Berkeley, it will target San Francisco. If you were doing this in a suburb of Houston, it will target Houston. The goal is for it to pick a plausible nuclear target that is someplace that people have been. And by the way, this works in all countries, too. It's not just the United States. And so, obviously, for our students in Hoboken, Manhattan is the clear site. So we've had the target reticule is set to Midtown Manhattan. So the first thing we do is select the size of the bomb. There are a lot of preset options from both historical and present-day weapons, and even hypothetical ones, like a hypothetical nuclear terrorist bomb. So just for the first demonstration, I just want to show you the first nuclear bomb, the Trinity test. This is, you know, what they call the gadget, 20,000 tons of TNT. It's the 70th anniversary of its detonation this summer. So we pick it. That will select the yield, in this case 20 kilotons, and then we click detonate. And this is what we will see. So the rings here are, you know, pretty familiar to people who are used to nuclear literature. They correspond to different zones of effects. And you're thinking, yes, well, isn't this the kind of thing we made during the Cold War? Yeah. The difference is that you can apply this to any arbitrary weapon, any arbitrary location, and there's about a million options as well. So all of this is done on the fly in the web browser. Even the height of the bomb can be adjusted, and different effects can be mapped. If we scroll down a little bit on the right, the legend explains what each of these zones correspond to. So the orange ring at the very center is the size of the fireball itself, which is already pretty large. The red ring is an area of total destruction, so it's about 20 pounds per square inch of overpressure. The gray ring is enough destruction to destroy any light or civilian building, so 5 pounds per square inch. The green ring shows 500 rem or 5 sievert, which is fatal for most people and even often fatal with medical attention. And the orange ring shows the range of third-degree burns and is also a good proxy for thinking about where combustible materials would be. So you can see that this is already doing quite a lot, but we can do more. There's also a button there that says casualties. So if we click that button and click detonate, it'll come up with estimates for how many dead and how many injured. So what it's doing here is running off a population density database that sits on the back end on the server, and it's applying some scaling laws that are derived from these government calculations. And so in this case, with our 20 kiloton bomb dropped on Midtown Manhattan, we have killed an estimated 325,000 people and have inflicted injuries on almost 400,000 more. There are issues with these calculation codes. They're very back of the envelope. There's some ways in which they might underestimate things. There's some ways in which they might overestimate things. But I think as an order of magnitude estimate, they're a pretty good place to start thinking about this sort of thing. So when I show the students this, I point out to them that sometimes they're kind of amazed that not everybody is dead. So we're over here in Hoboken again, up there. And we get our windows blown out, but otherwise we're doing okay. And they say, oh, this is great. These bombs aren't so bad. And then I say, well, what if your friends are in the city that day, right? It's an awful lot of people. This is way more people than died in 9/11, things of that nature. But these kind of early bombs, these relatively crude ones, they kind of punch out the center of a downtown, which is more or less what happens at Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So, all right, we can also do other things with this, though. We can select another weapon from this list. We can scale it up to the first hydrogen bomb, which is about 10 million tons of TNT from 1952. So keeping in mind now what the 20 kiloton bomb looks like on Manhattan, let's go out to the 10 megaton bomb. And so if we were doing this from the website itself, it would dramatically zoom out, and then all those numbers would tally up on the right. It's a pretty dramatic effect. And the students, again, these are undergraduates, college students, they want to seem cool, they want to seem aloof. They almost universally let out a gasp, just a, which is so great. It's so great to hear. That's how you know you're getting through to them, right? When they're involuntarily making noises they would be embarrassed about making. And so I'm pretty pleased with that. So with a hydrogen bomb, by contrast, completely obliterates the island of Manhattan, completely wrecks destruction across all five boroughs. Hoboken is gone on this map. It does not exist anymore. We've killed over 3.5 million people and injured another 3.2 million. So these are numbingly large numbers. This is a bomb that even Robert Oppenheimer, who always defended Hiroshima and Nagasaki, he thought this was a weapon of genocide. But we don't have to stop there. This just shows you the acute prompt effects of the bombs and the casualties. There's a little checkbox up at the upper right for showing radioactive fallout, the radioactive contamination. So we'll turn that on, click detonate, and you see the beginnings of a familiar contour, the amount of radiation caused downwind of the blast. This fallout model is again taken from government-derived models so that they could understand their own weapons effects. And it creates an area downwind, the dark red part of it, which is about 1,000 rads an hour, which would be, so that's fatal after a half an hour. That's an area of some 10,500 square kilometers. And even greater areas are for dangerous and contaminating fallout. So this is actually an area so large that we have to zoom out to see how large it goes. So this one bomb not only takes out the entire New York City metro area, but produces fatal levels of radioactive debris as far north as Boston, and radioactive contamination goes even into Canada. So again, this is what Oppenheimer called a weapon of genocide, no useful actual warfare. What makes this tool valuable, though, one of the things is its flexibility. So you can pick a modern Russian weapon, so made 800 kilotons, and set it off as an airburst as opposed to a surface burst. They have slightly different effects. They have, airbursts have a wider area of lower pressure than a surface burst and less contamination, and still does a lot of damage. So if we set one of those off over New York, actually I set it off over where we are right now, that would be 1.5 million dead, 3 million injured. We could also move all around the world. So here's a Chinese nuclear weapon, 3.3 megatons, set off over Paris. So that's 2.7 million dead, 3.6 million injured. We could set off North Korea's largest tested weapon so far over Seoul, South Korea, and see that while it is much smaller than the others and was derided in the press as being only 10 kilotons, that still kills around 100,000 people, which is a magnitude which is very hard to wrap your head around, and injures about 300,000. For those among who might want more details or to play with the model and more you know, carefully, want to know exactly what range windows get blown out or fires get started or paper burns or different levels of radioactivity, there's also lots of advanced options. So as you can see, I've opened them up on the right here. This sort of thing not only allows you to model very specific scenarios, but it also gives it some credibility, I think, with the real technical wonks and the journalists. It's clear that it's being taken seriously. What makes this really work, I think, is that it's personalizable. So it works anywhere in the world. The population estimates work anywhere. It's a global database. Almost everything I've done on this, I try to make sure it doesn't just work for Americans, because this is really a global phenomena. When this is over a space that you know and you love, full of your friends and relatives, it can hit pretty hard to find out what would happen. There's also options on here that will tell you how many schools get destroyed and how many hospitals and how many churches. A friend of mine who teaches at Princeton recently told me that he has an assignment for his undergraduates where they have to set one of these off over their hometown on the nuke map and then write a narrative of what happens in nuclear war, what happens to their hometown. And he says that some of them are reduced to tears. That's hard to pull off with college students these days. So I made the main nuke map, as I said. I want to show you briefly, my remaining time, one other visualization, a variation on this. I'm constantly searching for better ways to be effective. I don't try to just do one thing and say, well, this is popular, what can I do next? I felt like the main problem of the other nuke map is that for quote-unquote smaller nuclear weapons, that size that takes out Midtown Manhattan can be easy to underestimate. You can say, well, it's only Midtown Manhattan, which, you know, if you're in Midtown Manhattan seems a lot bigger than it does on a map. So I felt that part of this was an artifact of a 2D projection, which is also the way a bomber looks at things. It's not how a victim looks at things. So I wanted to change it a bit, and I made this new version a little while ago called Nuke Map 3D. So it looks like this when you start it up. It uses Google Earth. So it allows you to see things in 3D with little buildings and proper building up of this terrain. It allows for a complex 3D volumetric rendering of the effect. So once again, let's start with 20 kilotons set in Midtown Manhattan. So when we click detonate this time, this is the same result as that first bomb, but when you render it as an actual mushroom cloud, and again, the mushroom cloud is derived from actual calculations, actual models, suddenly this thing looks rather large. So we're viewing this from the height of an airplane, if we were sort of flying into LaGuardia or something like that. And we can already see that this, quote, small bomb is ridiculously large from a human scale. We are just not used to dealing with 30,000-foot clouds. This is what it would look like from where we are right now, looming up above us. You can pick really specific positions, and it will do an okay job of showing buildings and trees and things like that. And I found that personally, as somebody who looks at these kind of pictures every day, when I first started doing this, I was very affected by this. And I thought, well, that must be very powerful. It kicks in something in the brain where we understand the size of it much better. We feel appropriately small. And here's our 800-kiloton bomb, the Russian one. This is, again, viewed from 30,000 feet. You can see that the cloud is much higher than our airplane. This is something you'd be able to see from hundreds of miles distance. And I won't show you, because I don't have time, all the other options, but there's actually an animated version of this that shows you that it takes about 15 minutes for a mushroom cloud to reach its maximum size, and it just keeps growing and growing and growing in a grotesque fashion. And lastly, I find this view particularly effective. This is what an 800-kiloton bomb would look like if we were viewing it from the International Space Station. There's something about the fact that this would be easily visible at such a height and represent so much carnage down below that I find profound. What a waste of potential it would be. What a sad sight for anyone watching it. How small our politics would look in comparison. All right, so I made these sites. How successful has it been as a tool? Here are just a few of the numbers. So since I launched the regular nuke map, it's been viewed 9.1 million times. That corresponds to 7.7 million unique visitors. Since I did the 3D one, which requires more rigorous computing power, it's 2.3 million page views, 1.6 million unique visitors, still quite a lot of people. There have been 42.9, I actually just checked it before the talk, it's up to 43 million virtual detonations on the site. That works out to about 4 detonations per user on average. I keep very careful statistics about what people do so I can see how they're using it. Some they start with small bombs, they go to big bombs, then they go back smaller again. They experiment with these very different range of yields and weapons. They want to see what goes on, what matters. If I put it up to a million tons of TNT, how is that different from 100,000? They're teaching themselves. And nowhere do I lecture them, and nowhere do I tell them what they should do. It's purely self-exploration. And it's regularly shared and discussed on social media, which I've set it up to be able to do that very easily. I've made it so you can link to specific results and share them with whomever. And it's as a result, it's used by laymen of all political stripes. It's actually quite amazing to me. People on the far left, the far right, wherever, use this tool and find it reliable and use it to settle arguments online and things like that. But it's also used by journalists, it's used by academics, it's used by students. I'm very pleased with the wide range it has. The other thing I really like about social media is I can see how people talk about it. You can see what's effective and what isn't. So this is just a sample of comments on Twitter, find out how much damage certain nukes do, a little misspelled, for the possible future and for your own curiosity. You know, here's just a very test-it-yourself one. This is scary. Good few minutes of fun. This is creepy, and you're going to try it. It's a very funny place where this resonates with people, language-wise. I'm anti-nuclear weapons. It is not fun. This game is so fun, depresses me, too much fun, morbid curiosity. And these are all just random sampling. These are all within minutes of each other, random people. So there's a funny nexus of scary and fun, which I know for people in this room, you're thinking fun. Oh, that's horrible. Fun can mean that they're engaged with it. Fun can mean that they're using it. I care more about them getting a good sense of these things. The political implications will come later. It's also used by journalists, as I said, not just for stories about the nuke map, of which there have been several, but also for any story about nuclear weapons that comes up. A good number of journalists from The Atlantic, from all sorts of different places, will use the nuke map to illustrate stories because they need the information, and journalists need help with this too. They don't want to use that Dr. Strangelove calculator. So this is one from a little while ago about a bomb that almost went off in North Carolina in 1961, and traditional mushroom cloud, and then they used the nuke map to illustrate what the fallout would be if it had gone up. So this is, I see this as providing them a service, because the easier the information is, the more reliable it is for them, the more likely they'll get things right. And my real swan song was being cited on the Daily Show in the background, which is like, I mean, how much credit does one want in one's life? What else do I need? So it's had a pretty big reach, a lot of different audiences that can take advantage of this thing. All right, so to conclude, what are the lessons from this? What should we take away for thinking about making potential things in the future? One is that online applications are a really powerful medium, and we shouldn't underestimate them. All this stuff I'm showing you, all this reach, this is the labor of one person working part-time. This is not an expensive thing. The technological bar for doing this has dropped dramatically over the past 5 years. This is not that hard to do. Obviously, I feel like I've got the nuclear effects thing wrapped up, but there are so many other issues, nuclear, climate, energy, what have you, that could use treatments like this. Other lesson, making things local is really important. A lot of global issues, and people don't care about them unless they feel personal. And that's really what this is about, is letting people bring this global issue into their own experience. Individualize the engagement, let them tailor it, let them interact with it. Not a movie, not a lecture, but something where they teach themselves, because lots of studies have shown that that's the most powerful kind of learning there is. With nuclear, giving a sense of scale is so important because these things are so outside of our everyday experience. We are not used to explosions. We are not used to power. We are not used to these things that happen on these exponential scales. And lastly, teaching is important, but again, don't lecture. I feel like the power from this comes from the fact that I do not say, this is bad, this is good, you should think about it this way. I let people come to their own conclusions. Some of those people are going to come to like completely wacky conclusions. That's the nature of people. All right, thank you very much. I really appreciate your time.
Thanks very much. Whenever I see these maps, it's always New York City. I mean, you did it because it's local and we're here in New York City, but anywhere in the world where I see these maps, it's always New York City, so it's always particularly disturbing.